യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദികേന യോപകരോത്തം പ്രവർമുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ പ്രമാദ് വിവരണസ്യ ച. So we are continuing our discussion on these fivefold vrittis. Fivefold waves of the mind or modifications of the mind. In the last class we discussed vikalpa, that is pramana vibhare vikalpa nidra smrutayaka. So the third vritti is vikalpa, we already discussed in detail. The next two vrittis are nidra and smriti. Nidra means deep sleep. Smriti means memory. They are interrelated, but they are also different. So the sutra is the 10th sutra of Samadhivada, the first chapter. Abhava prityalambana vrittihi nidra. So definition of deep sleep. What is deep sleep? And how do we understand deep sleep as a vritti? That is an important subject for discussion. Very elaborate, very scientific discussion of deep sleep and memory from a spiritual and also purely psychological point of view. So the simple translation of this sutra is, that is, deep sleep is it is not an ordinary vritti. It is a special kind of vritti. And it is the basis of an experience of nothingness. So that's an important point. So what is deep sleep? When we talk about deep sleep, that is dreamless sleep, we should keep in mind the characteristics of the other two states of human consciousness, namely the waking state, that's the first state, and the dream state. Deep sleep is the third of these triple streams of consciousness, human consciousness. So all our actions and our experiences, internal experiences like happiness and unhappiness, joy, pleasure, pain, and so on, and also our interactions with the external world, different sensory objects, all of them play a very important role, not only in our waking state, but also in our dream state and also deep sleep state, as I explained in the last class. These are three states of human consciousness. Waking state we all know, but frequently we do not take into consideration deep sleep, because we frequently interpret deep sleep as an experience of nothingness. This is abhava pratyaya alambana. Patanjali accepts that. But there is a great difference. Deep sleep alone gives us complete restfulness. Mind becomes completely rested only when it is not interacting with any external objects. In the Vedantic language, it is called agrahanam, means total non-perception, non-cognition. Mental experience is practically nil, apparently. But Patanjali and also Vedanta, Patanjali system is yoga, and also Vedanta philosophy make a great distinction between those who hold between the view that deep sleep is a state of nothingness And the view that deep sleep is a state of absolute restfulness. The point is, in deep sleep also we have cognition. We experience something. That's called pratyaya used here. In deep sleep, there is an experience. We may not understand it, but there is no awareness of that experience. So, when we have knowledge, cognition, understanding, without our awareness of that experience, it is called deep sleep. Experience is there, but our mental tools, instruments with which we experience that restfulness in deep sleep is non-functional. That's why we feel a kind of complete restfulness only when we come out of deep sleep. That's why it's important to remember the difference between knowledge and awareness. Knowledge alone doesn't serve any purpose. If we do not know that we know certain things, then that knowledge doesn't serve any creative purpose. So knowledge should also be accompanied by our awareness of the fact that we have that knowledge. This awareness is totally absent in deep sleep. So in deep sleep, there is freedom from duality. We are alone in deep sleep. But in dream, we may have nightmares, we may have pleasant dreams. In dreams we walk, we interact with people, we see objects, we hear things, of course at the mental level, without the involvement of the senses of perception or senses of action. Still in deep sleep, in dream, we do have experiences. So that's why Vedanta says that in dream we have non-perception of the reality and also false perception of the unreal. So, to give an example, if you mistake a piece of rope for a snake, first of all, you don't understand that it is a rope, which is called agrahanam, non-perception of the real. When so long as you are not aware of the real, your mind will always be, your mind will superimpose the unreal over the real. So, we may misunderstand that piece of rope for a snake or a stick or whatever it is. So there is the problem of the non-recognition of the real and also the recognition of the unreal, the false. This is true for waking state and dream state. In waking state, we think we are just a physical body. We don't remember and we don't understand, we don't recognize the fact we are the real Atman, the soul, the self, that we don't understand. We interpret ourselves as this psychophysical mechanism, this body-mind complex, which is really non-recognition of the real. And because we don't recognize the real, we have to recognize something, so we recognize the unreal. We think we are nothing other than this body-mind complex. So that's why Vedanta interprets our ordinary state of waking state and dream state as eternal spiritual sleep. Anadi maya sutto yatha jiva prabuddhite. It is an eternal state of perpetual ignorance of our true nature. Now coming to the subject. After deep sleep, when we come out of the deep sleep, when we wake up, we feel a kind of internal bliss. And this bliss is an experience. That experience was there in deep sleep, but we were not aware of that experience in deep sleep. So, because of that experience, we feel completely rested when we come out of deep sleep. Now, this deep sleep also is linked to some sorts of our experiences in waking state. Those who practice meditation, those who feed their mind with good thoughts, good ideas, good emotions, spiritually healthy food, so to speak, they will have complete restfulness in deep sleep. And it is easy for them to have deep sleep. That's why everyone is actually seeking this deep sleep. When people complain, well, I don't get good sleep, they're actually trying to convey the idea that they are not getting enough of deep sleep, not dream or wake. Nobody wants dreams actually. Dreams can also be nightmares, both can be. So, any dream experience will not give us complete restfulness. Because in dream we are interacting with things other than ourselves. In dreams we are interacting with our own internal emotions. We become angry, we become happy, we suffer pain and pleasure. All these things happen in dreams. So there is no restfulness. So real restfulness is a kind of spontaneous feeling of inner blissfulness when we feel we are one with ourselves. As I mentioned in the last class, this happens only on two occasions. One in deep sleep when we are not aware of it, and in samadhi where we experience this bliss of eternal restfulness, spontaneous complete restfulness with full awareness. When we experience this with full awareness, we become enlightened persons. We become saints and sages. We become philosophers. After that experience, when we come out of it, when we wake up, we'll be able to look upon this world as something, okay, fine, but there is something higher. We will be able to transcend the empirical things. We'll be able to link ourselves to some transcendental higher state of awareness. But then this is possible only when we practice yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, all these internal disciplines. In mental disciplines, physical disciplines, moral disciplines. When we train our mind in a systematic manner, and then when we get this experience, it is called samadhi. On the other hand, what we get automatically without any struggle, any effort, is automatic, but then it doesn't have any impact. So, the Upanishads has got a mantra, animals also go into deep sleep, but they come back as animals. Simhova, Vyakrova, like you find in the Upanishads. See, lions, animals, tigers, all of them go to deep sleep and they come back at the sleep. So, also, everyday experience of deep sleep doesn't have any impact. They don't have a transformative impact on our personality and character. Now, Vyasa and other commentators make some very important observations about deep sleep. According to Vyasa, deep sleep is a kind of experience. So he called Tasmat Pratyaya Visesho Nidra. It is a special kind of experience. And the speciality of that experience is that we feel kind of internal bliss. And this bliss is a state of awareness when we are one with ourselves. When we experience this true nature within ourselves, but without proper training, so we are not able to recognize that experience for what it actually is. I give the example. This is the only example which I used on many occasions, to explain the difference between deep sleep that we get every day without any effort and the higher spiritual illumination, higher experience. A person who wants to go to New York from here can go in two different ways. Somebody can knock him down unconscious, put him in a box and take him to New York and bring him back. So physically he has gone to New York, but that journey doesn't really mean anything for him. That journey is different from having a real business to do in New York, booking your tickets, going there, doing the work with full awareness and coming back when you do all this with full consciousness and awareness, where knowledge is the awareness system. So when we practice spiritual discipline, yamas and niyamas, and get fully established in yama and niyama, our mind automatically gets trained to experience this samadhi for what it actually is, a kind of transformative, transcendental experience. There are other commentators who explain what nidra or deep sleep is. For many others, like, you know, Vachaspati, Hariharananda, Aranya and others, pratiyate anena iti karana maniprabha. So, the deep sleep produces a cause and it becomes a karana or a cause for negation of waking and dream states. So, deep sleep is interpreted just as a negation of waking state and dream state by other commentators. But Vyasa's commentary is much more important. Now the question arises, what is the psychological dynamics of these three experiences? That's the next point. As I mentioned earlier, in deep sleep, we do not become spiritually enlightened. I mentioned earlier. The reason is, the root cause of our bondage problems, like it's called Trishna in Buddhist tradition, or desire in its normal language, you can call attachment, ambition, desire for worldly pleasures and so on, which make us engage in different activities, which feed the mind with all kinds of samskaras, tendencies and impressions. They are re-experienced in dream state. What we gather in waking state, at the gross level, at the mental and sensory level, we re-experience in dream state at the mental level. At the waking state, our actions involve the participation of mind, intellect and also the senses. We walk, we take food, we eat food, we engage in different activities involving mind or intellect and also the senses of action, like eyes, the sense of vision, the sense of hearing, the sense of smell, the sense of touch and so on, and also the senses of action. So all these are involved in waking state. These actions produce vrittis, strong vrittis. And these vrittis, they lie dormant at the subconscious level. Later on, when we do not have control over the workings of our own mind, these vrittis, which are again induced by different goals, ideas, desires, plans and so on, they are all reawakened in dream state. That's why, though dream experiences are different from waking state experiences, you can never have a dream state which is totally detached and totally unconnected to waking state experiences. If we have a dream eating one special kind of food or sweet, it means sometime, somewhere, during waking state, we may not have eaten it, may have read in newspapers, may have seen an advertisement, or may have gone to a shop, seeing those things in the shop, and may make it wonderful to eat it. So that desire is replayed during dream state. So that's clear.
Then what about deep sleep? In deep sleep, though these desires are not functional during deep sleep, still we don't transcend them. But in samadhi state, after practicing spiritual disciplines, when we reach the highest samadhi state, we transcend these desires. We transcend all these ambitions, the sensory, our interest in sensory pleasures. So, when transcending is different from absence of it. In deep sleep, there is absence of desires, but we do not transcend them. We do not outgrow them. But in samadhi, there is not only the absence of desires, but also there is positive transcending of desires. So, that is the spiritual and psychological dynamics of Nidra. Next sutra is actually related to this, because Smriti and Nidra are not very different. Next sutra is Anubhuti Vishaya Asampramosha Smriti. Smriti means memory. What is memory? So we have to remember, we are discussing the fivefold vrittis. That is Pramana, Vibhirya, Vigalpa, Nidra, Smriti. You already discussed. Other three vritti we already discussed. Again, we have to keep in mind what is a vritti, that I should explain again. Vritti is nothing but the residual impact of whatever actions we engage in. Actions need not necessarily mean physical actions alone. A thought can produce a vritti. A word can produce a vritti. A passing idea flashing in the mind can produce a vritti. So, when we do something, when we speak something, when we think of something, after that it's over, the mind retains some residual effect of all these actions. That residual effect is called vritti. It's called modification. We can never consciously do anything without leaving some impact on the mind. See, the point is, mind influences the way we do things. And our actions also influence the mind. So whatever we do can have a direct impact on the workings of the mind. It's not frequently recognized by modern psychology. We all study about how mind influences actions. But actions also influence the mind. That's why in the spiritual literature it is said, you know, when we do good things, even at a purely physical level, or when we speak good words, or when we read good books, when we feed the mind with good, healthy food for the mind, the ideas and thoughts and concepts, then what happens? These activities are transformed into spiritual energy. So physical energy can be transformed into spiritual energy. People without any understanding of philosophy or spiritual literature, if they go on doing good actions, even if those good actions are done with strong desire, still those good actions will be transformed into spiritual energy. It means they will produce a mass of spiritual tendencies, ideas and impressions which will have an impact on the mind. So a person who goes on doing good deeds cannot have a bad mind. Because good actions, even done with strong desire, with selfish desire, though it may take longer time, to transform into spiritual energy. Actions done with total dedication and no desire will quickly transform into spiritual energy. So the idea is this, whatever we do will produce a vritti. These vrittis are fivefold: pramana, vipirya, vikalpa, nidra, smriti. So already we have discussed. Of this we are now discussing the fourth and fifth vrittis, that is nidra and smriti. So that is anubhuti, vishaya, asampramoshaha, smriti. What is memory? Memory is nothing but not losing mentally not losing the object or the experience that we already had sometime in the past. So asampramosha means not allowing an experience to slip away into unconscious, means remembering ourselves all the time. Now, memory, if we understand the spiritual dynamics of memory, we can change the way we live, we can change the way we think. So that's why, you know, there is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, that is, Matta Smriti Jnanam Apohanam Cha Sarvasya Chaham Kruti Sannivishto Matta Smriti Jnanam Apohanam Cha. Meaning is this, God says, the words from God, so memory, the ability to remember, it's very important, it's a gift from God. Knowledge is a gift from God. Forgetfulness also is a gift from God. If we always remember what we really do not want to remember, if we lose our ability to forget, then memory can become a terrible torment. That's when people want to run away from memory, that's when they take drugs and alcohol and things. Running away from memory. But memory, properly understood, can be a positive spiritual asset. So asampramosha means the ability to remember vrittis or ideas or actions which are positive. And you have to remember, both smriti, that is memory, and deep sleep, and waking and dream state, all these are dependent upon all these three factors, that is memory, knowledge and forgetfulness. These three factors are functioning at all these levels. Secondly, second point to remember is, we don't always remember what we want to remember. We have no choice. We often remember what we do not want to remember. That's why people get dead nightmares. People who may have bad experiences in the past may re-experience those things in dreams, though they do not want it. So there is no choice in this matter. So how to refine our memory, how to study memory as a spiritual tool, how to produce good memory. So, you know, there is a very interesting discussion of how design play a very important role in human personality. Though it is this story actually is not from yoga textbook. It is it is actually a quotation from what may be called the largest text on grammar. In fact, it is called Patanjali Mahabhashyam, a huge work. It may be several volumes the size of Encyclopedia Britannica. So many volumes. It was written by Patanjali. Patanjali himself wrote this famous book. So there's an interesting story how designs based on past memories are retained in the mind even into old age, becoming a great tormentor. The story is called Vruddha Kumari Nyaya. It means the example is not a very pleasant one. The story of an aged old virgin. That is the story. So a virgin, an old woman who didn't marry, couldn't marry, prayed to God for spiritual knowledge. But then when the God appeared before her, all her latent desires came to the surface of her mind. And you know what she asked? Putrame bahukshira gradamodhanam kanjana patriya gunjire. I should translate that. So the Sanskrit verse is of which comes from Patanjali's Mahabharata. Putrame bahu kshira kridamodanam kanjana patram bhujira. You know what she wanted? God asked him, you can ask for one boon. That he expected that she may ask for some spiritual enlightenment or anything. And there's a discussion after this in the Mahabharata. She wanted, you know what she wanted? She wanted plenty of sons, children, who would be able to eat a lot of cooked grains, or then it means lot of cooked rice or corn, whatever it is, mixed with milk from golden plates. So it means she will be able to marry, she will have children, and she will have plenty of wealth because those children will be able to eat their food every day from golden plates, and plenty of grains, plenty of cattle, because milk. So then the Patanjali, referring to his own work, he says, old age doesn't guarantee transformation of physical or psychological energy into spiritual energy. So he says, an example, he's given in the context of Sanskrit grammar, it's a Greek commentary on Sanskrit grammar, Panini Sastratya. The point is, he says, a spiritual seeker, if he wants, he can just go on doing good actions. If he's not an intellectual, he can go on doing good physical actions, service to others, he can, noble actions. Actions that bring good to others and good to himself. Actions which give us a feeling of internal peace and composure, feeling of inner contentment, spiritual, a kind of psychological contentment. If a person goes on doing those physical actions, those actions will be transformed into spiritual energy, and his mind itself will automatically get all these disciplines, you know, yamas and niyamas. I mean, he will become well established in non-violence, ahimsa, satya, truthfulness, ahimsa, satya, you know, asteya, total freedom from disciple, things which belong to others, non-possession, contentment, purity, internal purity, all these become natural. If a person, even at the physical grossest level, goes on doing good actions. Why? Because of these dynamics of vritti. Whatever actions we do, it produces vritti. And that vritti will not stop there. It will become a samskara, a tendency. It will become part of a character, of character. So it will go on building our character. So karma or action produces vrittis, becomes samskaras, it becomes strong tendencies, and it becomes a personality. So if you want good memories, even if you want good deep sleep, we can start with the kindergarten of spiritual life. We will go on doing things which are good for oneself and also for others. So, now coming back to the subject, of course this smriti is explained in many ways. There are two types of smritis according to Vyasa, the great commentator. One smriti is sopna, that is a dream. So the memory that comes to the surface of the mind when we dream are of course in some ways connected to our actions, real actions and real experiences in waking state, but then something will be added to that. So it is called imagined. It is called imagined memory in dream. But in memory proper, when we remember in waking state, it is the real experience brought back to memory level. Now, A much more important sutra is the 12th sutra, which has got a great spiritual significance. Abhyasa vairagya abhyam tad nirodha. Now, how to control, regulate and refine these vrittis? Remember, vrittis are, we can never avoid or run away from vrittis. Whether consciously or unconsciously, if we do good things, we will, without any doubt, we will build up a spiritual capital. Something positive. Still positive vrittis, positive samskaras, positive tendencies, positive impressions. And how do they function? Our natural instinctive action will reflect the state of our mind, vritti. How do we understand whether a person has done some good deeds in his past? He has got a good character. He has his mind, his personality, is a sum total of a lot of positive vrittis. How do we understand? His natural instinctive action or instinctive words, all these will reflect his real character, which are nothing but vrittis accumulated in the mental system, coming to the surface in the form of natural, effortless tendencies. Now the question arises, how to counter the impact of negative vrittis and how to accumulate more and more positive vrittis? That's the discussion in the 12th mantra, 12th sutra, that is Abhyasa Vairagya Abhyam Tad Nirodha. That is a much more refined and sophisticated interpretation of what I was stating till now. That is, constantly go on doing actions, not physical actions only. Reading is also an action. Anything that feeds the mind with good spiritual food. Spiritual food means spiritual vrittis. It's called abhyasa, constant practice. So how to restrict or how to restrict and restrain negative vrittis and also how to accumulate positive vrittis. These are interrelated. Once we restrain negative vrittis, positive vrittis will naturally dominate our character. Because our mind should be, mind is compared to a bag by the author of the Tattva Vaisharathi. There is a famous commentary to Vajaspati Mishra. So he says, it's a bag. This bag is full of vrittis, different types of vrittis, all the 5 vrittis. That means pramana, vibhade, vigalpa, nidra, smrutayaka. Okay. But these vrittis can be broadly divided into 2 categories, good and bad. Klishtaha, klishtaha, already, we already explained that. In other words, certain vrittis, certain tendencies, impressions, samskaras, natural characteristics, which are good for us. And how do we know they are good for us? The point is, when we act and behave under the influence of these positive vrittis, we feel a kind of inner contentment, satisfaction. When we act under the influence of negative vrittis, it creates friction and conflict. That's how to identify. Now, if we can restrain negative vrittis, that means negative vrittis will stop being produced. We won't be producing more and more negative vrittis, which means the positive vrittis will be more and more accumulating the mental system, the chitta, and we will have less conflicts when we engage in good actions. That's a very interesting point. When we try to do some good, noble actions, do we feel a great enthusiasm or do we feel conflict? If we feel conflict, it's because one part of the mental system is not cooperating. Which means a set of negative vrittis create an invisible stumbling block, a mental block, preventing us from going ahead doing good actions. Now, how to block it, how to restrain it? By consciously, repeatedly, abhyasa means repetition, constant, continued efforts. By going on doing good actions, good deeds, good words, and feeding the mind with good food, means spiritual food, spiritually healthy ideas, then what happens? Negative vrittis will not be accumulating, and the domination of positive vrittis will begin. And then we will have less conflict when we try to meditate, or even when we try to do some good actions, when we try suddenly to, you know, as I mentioned in the last class, people will always have this problem. The conflict and the confrontation between the intellect and mind. We read a book, we are highly impressed. It's a wonderful book. So we want to, we know it very well, and we are sincerely interested in practicing or maybe imbibing some of these positive ideas. With all sincerity and earnestness, we decide. But we try to do that, actually, an invisible mental block appears in front of us. And then we may procrastinate, or we may find a false justification for not doing it. We are aware of that the fact it's a false justification, but we somehow we cannot do what we actually want to do. But on the other hand, if we are trying to do something very ordinary, not very desirable, then there is no conflict. If we can do what we actually want to do, then the world will be a very good world. The world will be a good place for us to live. But it doesn't happen. So that's why abhyasa vairagya abhyam tad nirodhana. The restriction of vrittis, negative vrittis, could be attained through repeated practice. So Vyasa compares the human mind, or the chittam, mental system, into a river. So chittanadinama ubhaya tapo vahini vakati kalyanaya vakati papaya cha yatu kaivalya pragbhara viveka visheninna sa kalyana vaha. So this is interesting. You can think of mental system, chittam, as, let us say, a constantly flowing river. And this river of mind flows in both directions, positive direction and also negative direction. In which direction it may take depends upon the accumulation of vrittis. If the vrittis are positive, then naturally the mind, this mental river, will flow in the positive direction. If there is a domination of negative vrittis, then my mental river will flow in the negative direction. So that's why, you know, one ubhaya tapo vahini means two types of movement of the mental river. In one direction, positive direction. As I mentioned, you know, suppose you go to a library, read a wonderful book, a spiritually illuminating book, wonderful book. Immediately, oh, this is something wonderful to practice. You come back, keep the book down. Oh, I'll do tomorrow. So, on the one hand, our intellect is highly impressed by this idea. And we want to sincerely do that. So, the river, mental river, is trying to take one direction, to flow in one direction. But then, the accumulated negative vrittis, tendencies and impressions won't permit you. So, you may postpone it. Or maybe this is the right time. So, false justification is not, it is not hypocrisy or anything. We are helpless because our mental system is dominated by negative vrittis and samskaras. So, the one method is to restrain these negative vrittis by making constant effort to feed the mind with positive vrittis. At a mental level, we have less freedom. We don't have complete freedom as to what thought to think, what idea to contemplate on. Mind won't listen to your dictation. You have to mind will drag us in one direction. So very often we do not have much freedom to think the thought that we want to think. But then at physical level you have more freedom whether to take this road or that road, 180 or whatever, it be different highways are there, that you can decide. That no one will confront you. That you can decide. So at the physical level we have more freedom. So Vyasa, the great commentator, says, try to accumulate more and more positive vrittis by engaging in more and more physical actions, because these physical actions are good, noble, and good for others and for our own good, will produce spiritual energy and spiritual vrittis. And then when we try to do something noble, mind will cooperate. Because mind will slowly become, and it becomes subservient to higher ideas that comes that our intellect accumulates. So mind will listen to the intellect. Otherwise, we are all living at the mental level, not intellectual level. The conflict between these two, the mind and intellect, can be reduced by conscious efforts, spiritual practices. So Vyasa continues, samsara pragbhara aviveka vishayanimna papavaha tatra vairagyena visheshrotaha hili kriyandi viveka darshana abhyasena viveka sroda udghatite. So he says, Vyasa continues, so as I mentioned in the beginning, he compares the mental system into the flow of a river. The river can flow in one direction or in the another direction. The positive direction, negative direction. The direction to which the river flow may depend upon the vrittis and tendencies we have accumulated in the mental system. If you have more of positive vrittis, we will be able to restrain negative vrittis, and in direct proportion to the success in restraining negative vrittis, the positive vrittis will increase in strength and they begin to dominate. Then there will be less conflict in doing good actions, less conflict in doing meditation, and less conflict in thinking good thoughts, and thereby feeding our mind with healthy spiritual food. So we'll continue this discussion. This is very important. So sutra abhyasa vairagya abhyam tad nirodha. The abhyasa, how to repeat and how to begin at a kindergarten level, means physical level. Physical action is very much within our control. And slowly, when we accumulate good physical samskaras through physical actions, slowly physical actions will have their influence on the mind. So, and then mind will be enriched, the positive vrittis will be reinforced. So we'll continue this discussion next class. Now we will have interaction. You can raise questions, we'll try to respond.
So, in a way, this discussion relates to the question that is being constantly discussed in the West about whether or not we have free will, or how we have free will, and to what extent we have free will.
Yeah. In a way, we have free will, that's true. We don't have free will, both are right. So, freedom of will can be ours if positive vrittis begin to dominate. Because when we talk about freedom of will in a spiritual context, we mean when we want to do good things, mental block. mind doesn't cooperate with the intellect. So that's what we mean spiritual. I'm freedom of will in Western philosophy has got many other dimensions and implications. In this particular context, in the context of discussion of the fivefold vrittis, it means how to make effort to restrain negative vrittis, how to prevent negative tendencies and impressions getting accumulated in the mental system so that the mental river will not flow in the negative direction. So there we can have more and more freedom by trying to focus on physical good actions at the physical level. As I mentioned, you know, we cannot that tomorrow I will think this thought, your mind will not cooperate. But tomorrow I will, you can say, well, I will do some good physical actions. There we have more freedom. The Vyasa, with great insight, we can start at that level. Because even the grossest physical action, good actions, with discern, will have some positive good. They produce good vrittis. Any more questions? Then we will. Then I want to discuss with you about any about an important program we will have this month. That's May 29th. We have a very important program in Ulima Retreat, that is in Marine, West Marine. We have a huge retreat center in Ulima, about 2,300 acres of land, and we will have a discussion on the theme, Women Saints of East and West. So, that's a discussion. We will have three talks on Sister Teresa of Avila, the great Carmelite reformer, by a senior nun from New York. Then we will have a discussion on Holy Mother Sri Sharada Devi and Sister Nivedita Margaret Elizabeth Noble, who was a Irish disciple of Swami Vivekananda. With long discussion, we will have interactions, question answers in the afternoon. So please remember, Monday, May the 29th, Memorial Day at Ulima. Thank you. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Namaste.